Today on PDGA Radio, we talk disc design with Drew Gibson, an expert who both designs and then throws those discs for a living. We also chat about your defending players and rookies of the year and how they earned those honors in 2021. And as always, a little news and a lot of fun. Welcome to episode 3 in 2022 of PDGA Radio. I'm Grant Zellner, sitting alongside none other than, well, I can't just say you're the host because you're so much more than that, Jennifer Allen, the champion over the weekend of the Shelly Sharp Memorial. Yep, she won it. And now here she is in the studio, all sleepy-eyed and bleary, but ready to go.
It was a great weekend. I definitely had a cup of coffee this morning, and I'm not a coffee drinker.
The sacrifices you make to be a part of PDGA Radio. So, well, tell us real quick about how your tournament went.
It was a great weekend. We had a lot of amazing women out here. I think there was 9 in our field. So it was a good way to, you know, remind us that we're this big season's about to start and there's a little bit more work to do.
Getting things going with the first A tier of 2022. But enough about you, Jen, because we've got a special guest in the studio and we've got to get going right now. In the PDGA Radio studio right now, none other than Drew Gibson. How you doing, Drew?
Good. How are you? Thank you for having me.
All right. Now, I know that in this day and age, we like to use the term off season. There's no such thing as an off season. There's nothing but more work to do between the last tournament of 2021 and the first one of 2022. So how have you been spending your time over the last couple of months?
Just been busy, been designing discs, playing a lot of disc golf actually this year. Normally I actually have an off season and take, you know, a few months off. This year I didn't. I just kept on playing through, thankfully I have a California winter. So
nice.
I wouldn't really call it much of a winter when you can go outside every day still. But for the most part, I mean, I've just been trying to focus on, you know, growing my brand, growing the sport, growing, you know, my game, trying to, you know, just take it to the next level.
I like that you just said part of what you're spending time doing is designing discs because as the people who have been following you for years now know, we could talk to you about any of about 60 different topics. We could talk to you about throwing discs incredibly far and parking 600-foot holes. We could talk to you about cashing in 100-foot putts, 4, 5, 6 of them in a row at a single tournament, which we got to see you do a couple of months ago. We could talk to you about, you know, you have a propensity for acing at just the right moment. And that's just your on the course exploits. But I wanted to talk to you today about something a little off the beaten path. I want to talk to you about that disc design process. I think there are a lot of people listening right now that are new to the sport, new members of the PDGA, things like that, that, you know, they know that the discs they buy in the store or online are different shapes from each other, and they have some idea of why. But I think a lot of us, myself included, are a little fuzzy about all the work that goes into designing a brand new disc. And with your company, you're doing that very thing right now.
Yeah, I honestly, as a player, you know, previous to having this opportunity, I never understood either. You know, obviously, just like you did, I understood that, hey, a Destroyer does this and a, you know, Exodus does this and a Scepter does that. But I never really quite understood, like, the, you know, 1/1000th of a millimeter making a, you know, a difference, you know, and that's what I've learned over this last couple months is, like, you know, you can tell, you know, even just the way the plastic firms up after it comes out of the mold makes a difference on how the disc flies, and the percentage of stiffness does this to the flight. And, you know, oh, we could close the, you know, you could close the mold a little tighter and make the disc a little bit different. It's like, I didn't even know that was a thing. I thought once you had the mold, it's like, it just spits out a unit and it kind of is what it is. And some are better than others.
I was going to say, and who are you doing this for? What was the name of the company?
So Finish Line Discs.
There you go.
I've started my own brand, my own manufacturing company. So I'm designing and launching a full line of discs through Finish Line Discs.
Excellent. So let's start at the beginning then. Like you said, there's lots that goes into this. Let's start at the beginning. What begins the process of, we need a new disc, we need a new shape, what is it that inspires that need? Is it having an existing disc and going, man, if only this disc did this one thing a little different? Or is it trying to match a competitor's disc and going, hey, they've got that over there, we need our own version? Or is it lying awake in bed at night and you can't sleep and you just have an idea and you think, man, I wonder if that would work? What is it that inspires a new disc?
To be honest with you, I think it's all three.
Okay.
The first disc that we're releasing should be middle of February is going to be, I'm going to say, like, not like anything else, really. I mean, it's a fairway driver, so of course it's like something else. But we had no influence. It's not like we took measurements of a T-bird and copied it, or we did this or we did that. But I'm sure there will be discs, you know, like maybe per se the Buzz. I mean, I love the Buzz. Maybe I'll send it over and say, hey, can we take some measurements on this? You know, make a 3D, you know, print of it and let's see what we think. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, make the tweaks from there. This is obviously like a broad question. And I think that I'll do all three. I think there'll be a time where I wake up at 4 a.m. and go, oh man, I want to try something, you know, or, you know, hey, I want to copy this, or hey, you know, like I said, our first disc is, there was no copy. I don't think in the market there's really even a disc that flies out of the box like this new prototype does.
Mm-hmm.
So it definitely wasn't influenced by, say, a Thunderbird or anything like that.
When you come up with a new idea, like maybe this fairway driver you're talking about, did it start with a sketch? Did it start with, I don't know, a clay model? I really have no idea. What was the first sort of physical representation of this new idea?
So they made it in like a computer file, which I'm not very witty about what you would call exactly that. And then they turned that into a 3D print, and they sent me the 3D print and said, hey, what do you think about this? Like, feel all of this. And I got the print and I was like, oh, this seems good, but this is the first time I ever went through this process, so I don't really per se know what I'm looking at. And you know, the team was like, oh, you know, trust me, it's going to be good. And I was like, okay. So we had to wait, I mean, like 3 months for the mold to come in because of everything that's going on right now. It took a long time to get here. And then I got for the first set of prototypes, and I called and said, hey, I want this to be like 7% stiffer. Like, that's where we're at right now. It's like, you know, we have it kind of down to like a science. So the prototype that I have and versus like what's going to be coming out is actually going to be a little stiffer. But it kind of just starts out as, you know, a drawing, and then turns into mm-hmm. a 3D print. And then I kind of feel the 3D print and go, okay, yeah, I think if this was in XYZ plastic at this stiffness, I would like it. And they sent me the prototype, and then I threw it and I was like, okay, I like it, but it needs to be a little stiffer. And so the production run is going to pretty much be exactly what I wanted.
Now I have to ask, can you throw the 3D print?
No, it's super, super light.
Okay.
Like I'm sure if there's, you know, a way to add weight, it, you know, it feels like it's like a real disc, you know, but it's just so light. There's no way that it could. And it's hard as a rock.
Oh, really? I thought maybe it would shatter the first time you threw it, but it sounds like it could handle it.
No, I think it would shatter. That's what I'm saying. It's so hard, and I don't think it would do much.
Brittle. I gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
So then that was also an interesting point you just made, that the actual manufacturing of the mold, which is the mold itself, essentially a metal, almost like with a top and a bottom shell, right?
Correct. Yeah.
So getting that, however they mill those, getting that done took 3 months, and only then can you start the prototyping phase.
Yeah, you can't create a disc without a mold. And like I said, with everything that's going on, everyone is either backed up or having some issue, or people are sick or whatever. So, you know, it took a long time to get it. But yeah, I mean, pretty much you can have 1,000 ideas. Like right now, our second disc is already made, but there's no mold, so we can't do anything.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Are these mold, the companies that are making these molds, are they not disc golf companies? They're companies that specialize in metalworking and things like that. So you're having to wait on all of their supply chain issues and all that kind of thing.
Yeah. Like I don't believe in the sport right now. There's like a molding company just dedicated to making disc golf molds. So everyone, Discraft, Innova, Discmania, you know, everyone's getting a mold made by an actual like big metal company. As far as I don't know the insides of everyone's company, but you know, I don't think there's like a disc, you know, just call the disc golf mold company and say, hey, I need one of these.
The disc golf. Maybe that's the business opportunity.
Yeah, there you go.
Drew Gibson founds the Disc Golf Mold Company. All right. Once again, Jennifer, we've come up with an idea on the show, so we're going to have to get it.
We need to start making all these official. I know. For sure.
I'm going to write them down and make sure that we get our kickbacks at the end. So, okay. So now you've got a mold, you've been prototyping it. And as you said, you're not doing the computer drafting. You're doing more like the actual in the field testing. which of course is perfect for your skill set. And you're out there throwing, you're coming back, you're saying, let's make it stiffer, let's try it in this plastic, let's tweak the design just a little bit or whatever. We're trying that. So now you've settled in on the disc. So now the question is, this is kind of a two-part question, I guess. What is it that makes you think to yourself, this is going to go? We need to mass produce this because it's going to sell. What's the feedback you get that lets you know a disc is going to sell and this is a good idea? And then the second question is, now you got to name and market the thing. How do you decide what you're going to name a brand new disc? What kinds of ideas go into that process?
So when it comes to like pulling the trigger on thinking it's good, I just had my buddies at home throw it. I mean, Adam and AB threw it this week, and everyone that's thrown it literally was like, oh, I love this thing. And Mikhail LaVisca threw it and literally texted and asked for like an exemption to put it in his bag from Prodigy. So, I mean, the disc.
That's awesome.
So literally, I mean, that disc kind of speaks for itself. I'm sure there's discs where I'm going to have to really market it and get people to understand like why we made it and then buy it. This disc, I think it's one of those things where as soon as somebody throws it once, they're like, oh, if I can use this, I want it, you know, and that was kind of my idea for the first disc was to make something that anyone can use, whether your skill level is just beginning or your skill level is top-notch professional. You can use the disc, you can appreciate it, you can understand it, and it's something that doesn't need a lot of practice or effort to be able to use. But also, if your skills are honed, you can use it on every single hole and throw it 500 feet, you know, so that was kind of like the, what I wanted to do. It's like, I don't want to start with a destroyer where it's, you know, 10% of the, you know, disc golf population can actually like utilize it well. And then when it came to naming it, I've named my brand that off something that was pretty easy. So I can kind of name it anything. So I decided for the first disc to name it the Era, ERA, as like beginning all of right. an era. So that's kind of how I came up with that, was just, I thought it'd be like kind of like a cool little innuendo to just name it the Era, as it's the first disc of my line and everything.
Nice. So, and as you said, when can we expect maybe to see an Era that somebody like me can actually get my hands on, assuming you don't go and ship me one right now?
You got to talk to your buddies at the PDGA about that. So the disc is actually at PDGA right now getting approved.
Okay.
So we're just waiting on approval. And then as soon as it gets approved, we're going to do the first run. And then we were going to relaunch it at DiscCon, which sadly got postponed. Yeah. And so we're going to, I think it's just going to end up being online, retailers, wholesalers, all that type of stuff. You know, probably middle of February, I have to guess, we'll start kind of getting them out there.
So that first run will take maybe, a couple of weeks to actually run and then finish and have ready for shipping?
Yeah, so as soon as we get the go-ahead from PDGA, because, they have to take out their digital micrometer and all that stuff.
Right,
and
yep.
We don't want to run 50,000 discs and then have them not be within spec. So, you know, we want to get the approval first, and then we're going to run pretty much run them until the need is filled or we have no more time on the machine.
Right. And how many, again, did you say would be in this first run?
We're not 100% sure yet. We had like a pretty decent sized pre-order, I believe. So I'm not really that sure. At one point we had a number in mind, and I think now we're just going to kind of make them until, you know, wherever we think that we could stop. And I just don't want people to be all upset about not getting a disc.
Right. Yeah. That's something that we have to worry about now in a way that we didn't, you know, even probably 18 months ago or 2 years ago. Just the demand can go through the roof so fast.
Yeah. You know, So I just want to try to keep up and keep the people who want to support my brand and stuff happy and not upset that they didn't get their, you know, their. And again, you're never going to be able to make everyone happy, but with this first launch, I want to try to at least get a pretty good amount of them out there to where people, you know, that if they didn't get it, it's because they took 5 days too long.
Nice. All right. Well, hey, you already told us you've got a second disc that's already in the research and development process. Is there anything else on the horizon you want to go ahead and let us know is coming from either your disc manufacturing brand or anything else? Want to give you a chance to kind of go ahead and plug yourself. So anything else going on you want to let us know about?
Yeah, we just have another disc coming. Hopefully, you know, it all depends on the molding and all of that. And I'm hoping for, you know, April, May area. That might be a little soon, but that's kind of what I'm hoping for.
Mm-hmm.
And then just looking out for merch. I mean, we have my Drew Gibson brand merch, and then we're going to have Finish Line branded merch. So, but all that, I mean, we haven't even started on that yet. Like my Drew Gibson brand stuff is already out, but like Finish Line merch and stuff, we haven't even like started creating anything. So we're kind of just, we're trying to do one thing at a time. There's a small group of us and there's a lot of stuff going on. So
right.
we're just trying to keep up. And, you know, I also, my season's starting, you know, within the next couple of weeks. So I have to, you know, get out and do that. And so we're pretty swamped with all of the projects we're doing. But as for like stuff that's coming up, I'll just say, look out for that first disc in, you know, pretty much a month. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to just keep rolling stuff out after that.
All right. The era on the way. Well, hey man, before I let you go, do you want to play a quick game of quick cues with us?
Sure.
Quick cues is just a couple of rapid fire. It's like a lightning round, just some rapid fire questions, giving everybody a chance to get to know, hopefully at least one little fact about you that they didn't know before they tuned in today.
Okay.
All right. We'll hit it right out of the park. Drew Gibson, if you were not a pro disc golfer, what do you think you would be?
I'd probably be in some type of sales. Jen could probably agree with that.
For sure. He's definitely a good salesman.
Any particular product?
I'm really into cars, so I would like to sell cars, but I also don't think that, like, you know, the typical car salesman has the best rep, but that kind of fits my, that kind of fits my style, you know?
You tried it out for a little bit. Yeah.
A very self-aware man. I like that. What are your favorite sports or hobbies outside of disc golf?
I love, you know, traditional golf. And then again, it goes back to, I like anything with the motor, whether it's go-kart racing, dirt bike racing, car racing. I mean, I'm into all that stuff and participate in all that. So I would say that my two like hobbies are anything with a motor than golf.
Are you familiar with the Chili Bowl Nationals they just had in Tulsa, Oklahoma last week?
What is that?
The Chili Bowl Nationals, it's micro sprint racing at an indoor track. Lots of NASCAR drivers and other guys come in their off season to compete in this event. Just YouTube it. It's called the Chili Bowl Nationals. It'll blow your mind.
Wow, I know what I'm going to do this morning.
You'll have a lot of, I'm not kidding. I've gotten to attend it in person. It's really, really cool. Check that out. In the Hollywood movie about Drew Gibson, who plays you?
Mario Lopez.
Nailed it.
That is the best answer we've ever had on Quick Use. What in your life on the road, and I do a lot of traveling for disc golf events and stuff as well, so I'm always asking for my own benefit. What favorite movies or books right now are you watching or are on your short list to help pass the time on the road? Books and movies, favorites. What do you got?
My favorite movie is probably Run All Night with Liam Neeson.
Okay.
And then book, my buddy Scott Machen, does wealth management for a living, and he just gave me a book called Tax-Free Retirement, which is pretty much just helping you understand the ways to put your money into certain things to have an easier life when you're 100 years old, even though I'm, you know, so I've been reading that book a little bit. I mean, the time has been short, so I haven't got very far in the book, but I definitely think that that's a book that's, you know, anyone could benefit from and read and enjoy. And then, you know, I'm not that big into like TV shows and movies, honestly, but I do enjoy like American Sniper, Run All Night, stuff like that.
Nice. I'm writing this stuff down. How about a hidden or maybe even a not so hidden talent?
Oh man. I don't know. I'd say I'm pretty good at like driving or riding, like, you know, dirt bikes or cars or whatever. Like,
okay.
You know, I'm,
yeah, sure.
Anyone that's probably been in the car with me would say like, I'm a pretty good driver. And I feel like that's a talent that only a few people would know because no one's ever really in the car with me, but I would say that, you know, I could get on a dirt bike and ride it. I could get a race car down a track. Like, you know, I'm pretty good at being able to maneuver things.
Any interest in getting in maybe one of these celebrity races?
I would do any of that stuff. I mean, I've been trying to get into like the celebrity like golf tournament.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So
that sounds like fun.
I don't know if they would consider me a celebrity though. So that's probably like the first hurdle we got to jump.
Nice. All right. All right. And the last question, this is a new question on Quick Cues, and this, I'll tell you where this comes from. About a week ago, I think it was Austin Hanum tweeted out a picture of a steak dinner. And he said, my favorite thing to have right before a tournament. Well, it's probably a year ago or so. A very similar tweet came from, I think it was Paul McBeth, that said it was a steak dinner. And he said, this is what I love to have right after a good weekend on the course. And so it got me thinking, okay, so which way do you go on that, Drew? Are you a have my favorite meal before the tournament to put me in sort of a happy frame of mind? Or are you a have my favorite meal after the tournament as a reward? Which way do you go on that?
I'm a eat my favorite meal every day because I do what I want.
That, I'll testify to
I
that.
Thought we already, that's what I am. I thought we already had the best answer ever, and then you topped yourself.
Yeah. So that's my answer, is I do what I want when I want and I eat what I want, no matter if it's Thursday or Tuesday.
All right, Drew, like I said, we could literally talk to you for a couple of hours about half a dozen different topics, but I know you're a busy guy. I know there's no off season for you. I know you have stuff to get to even this morning. So we're going to let you go ahead and get out of the PDGA radio studio with our just tremendous thanks for visiting with us today and pulling the curtain back just a little bit on what it is that you're doing off the course.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate you and Jen, you know, offering me to be on the show and, you know, share some of the insights and laughs with, you know, everybody. So just overall, thank you guys for everything you're doing to help grow the sport and keep this podcast going. I know that obviously it's not easy work. Jen and I got up at 6:45 this morning yep. to be on here. You know, so I just appreciate you guys, you know, being selfless and being willing to promote the sport and, you know, talk about it and get people on here to, you know, promote the game.
Right on, man. Best of luck in 2022.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
All right, another special treat for you today. Another special guest in the house. I bet you didn't know this, Jen. Drew Gibson's not our only special guest of the day. Right now, we have the current 2022 Player of the Year points leader. Now, I know it's early in the season, but the points leader is in the house. You want to know why?
Sure.
Because the points leader is you.
That's crazy. I never thought about that.
Did you know?
I did not know. I know I won. Yeah.
Your victory this past weekend in the first A-tier event of 2022 cashed you in points for that victory. And so since there's only been one A-tier so far in 2022 and you won it, that makes you the leader right now in the race.
I'll try to maintain that lead the best I can.
This is a perfect segue into a series that's right now running at PDGA.com. It's a story series about all of the annual awards that the PDGA hands out every single year. And we started with the Player of the Year Award. That story ran a little over a week ago. And then this past Friday, we posted a story on the Rookie of the Year Award. And there are several other stories to come in the very near future. So we want to stop down right now and let you know about those two awards that have already been handed out, the Player of the Year Award specifically. And we'll start with the women.
Yeah, it was another tight battle, like always, between Katrina and Paige. They're just two amazing players. And so they're, as long as they're playing, I think it's always going to be a tight race between the two of them. And it just depends on who was more consistently, I think, in overall all the events and how many that they played. So Katrina always gets out there and plays a lot of golf. Mm-hmm. And I think Paige this year decided to take it back, rest a little bit more, right? Maybe. And I definitely both like sides of that. Because for me, one of the things I lack, I feel like, is the consistency of playing, because I'm not out there every weekend. So I can see how Kat likes to be consistent, be out there, be on her game. But on the flip side of that, it's really nice when I get to leave tournaments and go back home and focus on work or my kids or whatever. So I like how Paige is taking that time off to reflect, mentally refresh, and maybe that overall, a little bit more rest will make you win, you know, the major or large big events versus just playing towards the top on a lot of them. So I like both views. I think this will continue to be a tight battle between these two players, as well as bringing in a ton of more amazing female golfers.
Mm-hmm, no doubt about it. Now, the Award Spotlight article illustrates for you everything you need to know about how this award gets sort of competed for by our players. It tells you about how they earn points at majors and disc golf pro tour events. It used to be both the national tour and the disc golf pro tour events. Now those are one and the same. It tells you how the points get distributed for top tens in those events, and also how you can earn some, I consider them almost bonus points. If you go and play in an A tier and finish on the podium, you're going to get up to 15 points for those victories or seconds or thirds. And for Kat and Paige, it was a seesaw battle all season long. Both had a few off weeks in terms of events they played but didn't place very well in. Both had a number of victories. As you said, Jen, Paige elected to skip a couple of events here and there. And then came back strong at other events, of course. Kat chose to fit in a few A-tier events that Paige didn't ultimately play. And at those events, she got another two victories. And when you look at the bottom of the chart there in the article, you can kind of see where that made the difference and gave Kat the 2021 FPO Player of the Year. Now, on the men's side, it came down to kind of no surprise in many ways, Ricky and Paul. And in their case, their seasons were a little bit more comparative to each other. Both had a similar number of wins. Both had a similar number of events that they didn't play very well. They were at, but didn't play very well. At least not for their standards. Let me put it that way. They played very, very well, but for their standards, you know, a fifth or a sixth isn't the same as a second or a third. Both worked in a similar number of A-tier events. Both skipped a similar number of events for their own, as you said, mental and physical health and their rest. And at the end of the season, you know, they both had a similar number of weeks that they were grinding out second and third place finishes. And it just happens that Ricky earned just a couple of more points in that regard. And that's why Ricky was the 2021 MPO Player of the Year. Now, the Rookie of the Year story, award spotlight on Rookies of the Year, that posted just a couple of days ago on Friday. I had the pleasure of actually writing that story, and that was fascinating. Jen, I don't know if you follow the rookies. I know you follow them personally because obviously yeah. They're nipping at your heels.
I definitely follow the women and played with all of these players, and they're all incredible players. So.
Right, but I bet you don't follow the way the points work maybe as closely. And it's fascinating. In the Rookie of the Year race, there's a few more opportunities to earn points, mainly by even if you finish outside the top 10, you can still earn points. And on the men's side, it was frankly a blowout. Gannon Burr earned points at five or six total events, including one major and a handful of Elite Series events, and he placed very, very well. As a matter of fact, with only one exception, any single one of his finishes, whether they be at, I want to say Waco was one of them and a couple of others, any single one of his finishes would have been enough by itself for him to take home the Rookie of the Year honors.
That's incredible.
It really, really is. But so anyway, he took the Rookie of the Year honors for 2021 in an absolute blowout. Lots of other men played and played in a lot of local, you know, A-tier type events. And so just didn't have the opportunity to earn enough points at enough venues to really stay in the hunt. So that's maybe something that I don't think is going to happen too much here in the near future.
I was going to say, do you think that players, and it's been so long since I've been a rookie, do you think players think about that going in before the season? Like, okay, there's this huge honor to be Rookie of the Year or whatever, or Player of the Year. Like, these are the things that I need to look at and play to win this. Like, do you think that was ever on his mind, or just to get out there and play as many events as possible? And, oh, this is a bonus. You know, I won Player of the Year.
You know, I think it's a little bit of both. I don't think necessarily, at least at the beginning of the year, the idea of winning a season long honor like that plays too much into your decision making for what tournaments you play in. But I think that as the year comes to a close, I can only speak for myself, and obviously I'm an amateur in terms of my skill level, but I'm competitive just like anybody else. And if I looked at the points and realized, hey, this weekend, you know, I need to play either event A or event B. And I realize you have to decide what events you're going to play in maybe a little further out than that, but just go with me here on the illustration. you know, I might choose one event over the other because the opportunity to earn more points is there, or because maybe I choose one event over the other and I'm thinking to myself, hey, I just need to place, say, fifth or better, and that'll give me enough points to definitely lock it up. Or, you know, so I think the competitive nature by the end of the season might play a little bit of factor, at least for some players, not all.
It might be too late, though. So
it might be too late.
Maybe now for all players out there, new players next year, if this is an award you want to win at the end of the year, start early.
start early and know that placing well in a major or an elite series event, a disc golf pro tour event, that's going to give you a lot more. Placing seventh or sixth or something like that in a DGPT event is going to give you more points than winning an A tier.
Right.
So, you know, that's just kind of the way it works. And the women's rookie of the year race was significant as well.
Yeah. Ellen Hansen came out, you know, with a amazing background history of playing an ultimate. So she started, I think, as a professional FPO player for disc golf with a little bit of advantage, but like she really stepped onto the scene and dominated quickly, I think. So that's not a surprise to me that she came away with this honor this year. But there's a lot of incredible female golfers coming up. And so Stacey Rensley, Holland Hanley, I've played with her. I mean, incredible golfers. So I think next year as well, I see so many women on Facebook saying, I'm going to go on tour. And so I think we will have another tight battle next year for the female rookie of the year.
Yeah, it was a tighter battle. That's for sure. But in a similar way, Ella, she earned the bulk of her points by placing well at those DGPT events and those majors. Now, so did the other players vying for the FPO Rookie of the Year. They just maybe didn't do quite as well. I got to say, Stacey Ronsley, if you look at her finishes, you talk about consistency. You know, she's right on the edge of the top 10 or top 15. But she's there every single week.
Yeah, so, she committed to a tour. So, yeah. And Ella did too, I believe. I don't know if she was out there full time, but she definitely played a large number of the major events. Holland wasn't. Holland also was working full time back in California. I believe this year she's now moved down to Texas and is planning to tour kind of full time. So we'll see her out there a lot more this year, but Stacey and Ella were definitely out there at almost all the big events.
Mm-hmm. And just at the end of the day, Ella had those high finishes at a handful of events while Stacey was super consistent. And at the end of the day, that earned a few more points for Ella. And so Ella Hansen was your 2021 Rookie of the Year. It's really cool stories that you can see exactly how things unfold. And like I said, more awards spotlight stories on the way in the coming weeks at pdga.com. Your PDGA news updates for week 3 of 2022. First of all, Jen, can you believe we're at week 3 already of the year?
Yes, just because I'm tired from playing golf all weekend. So the season's definitely started. I can already feel that.
Yeah. Just because it's week 3 doesn't mean we're not already cranking. There is no off season. We all know. So first story of the week, the PDGA seeking volunteers for a couple of important medical subcommittees. And this announcement is up right now at pdga.com. This is the way things happen for the PDGA and organizations like it. We've got subcommittees, a group of people that work together to come up with how to progress the sport forward, how to address issues in the sport. And in this case, we're talking about several medical issues in terms of fair and equitable competition. Two subcommittees right now looking for volunteers. One is a subcommittee on gender-based divisions. This is a subcommittee that's going to look at the International Olympic Committee's framework for how they address this issue. And so this committee will look at that framework, which is a model for what the PDGA already does. This committee will look at that framework, look at other research, and determine the best course of action starting in 2023 and beyond. So it's an important subcommittee, and I know this is an important topic for the sport of disc golf. So that's subcommittee number one. The second subcommittee is one on prohibited substances. There's a global body, the World Anti-Doping Agency, that, you know, creates their list of prohibited substances. Again, the PDGA relies heavily on that information, but our own subcommittee is going to do what we feel like is best for the sport. So if you're out there and you are a person in the medical field, maybe you're a doctor or some other, a nurse, some other similar profession, this might be the right subcommittee for you. So hit the announcements on PDGA.com, find this article. You've got all the information that you need right there on how you can put your name in the hat to be a part of these important subcommittees. So that's story number one for week number three here at the PDGA.
Did you see that they announced another amazing Arizona location for the Disc Golf Pro Tour All-Stars?
Oh, a great second headline for today. Yeah, a new course for the All-Star event that kicks off the season. Of course, it's an unofficial event, but it's an official event because if you're there, you want to win it. And El Conquistador, a resort in Tucson, is going to host this year's Disc Golf Pro Tour All-Star event. And you've played that course, right?
Yeah, they hosted the Arizona State Championships there a couple of months ago. Absolutely beautiful location. I think the camera crews are going to love it probably more than anyone because it's going to make their job easy. Like mm-hmm. The backdrop to this location is just gorgeous. The course was really fun and challenging. There was a wide variety of long or technical, not so much technical. It's not a wooded, it's on a golf course. So it's not there's no tight wooded shots or anything like that, but very challenging. And on the short holes, there was so much OB or trouble surrounding, whether it be on just the very edge of a golf green, making like your layup zone was very, very difficult and challenging and really made you question everything you were doing. So long courses or long holes were tough. Short holes had a ton of challenge as well. So I think it'll be a really fun event and absolutely gorgeous. The Hilton Resort there was beautiful. So it'll be a fun way to kick off the year for sure.
Is this a permanent in the ground course or is this a temp course?
No, it's a temp course.
Oh, so maybe some players,
yeah,
not so familiar with it.
For sure. I'm sure they will set up a different layout than what we played, but there'll probably be some similar holes, I'm sure. There was two courses that we played that day. The AMs played one course and the pros played another. So there's a lot of area.
Oh, nice.
So they may change the layout and make it a lot more technical, harder, longer shots than we played. So
the first ever windmill hole. No, I'm
kidding. No, it's too pretty for that. Maybe like down the slide by the pool shot, maybe.
There you go.
Yeah, the resort was gorgeous.
I don't care if that's part of the tournament. That'd be a great video to have all the players go down the slide and try to sink like a 100-foot putt off the slide.
For sure. I can see that happening.
That's like, dude, perfect. Yeah. Final story of the day, Disc Golf Con unfortunately canceled for 2021. It was going to be the inaugural event there in Las Vegas. And, you know, this Omicron wave of COVID, I think, was really the one and only deciding factor on canceling this event.
The numbers have been unreal. I actually kind of was worried right when that was dropped that it was canceled. You know, we're about to start our first A Tour here in Arizona. And I think some of the numbers last week, we were over 18,000 cases a day. So these are not as severe cases, but the numbers are huge. And,
right. You
know, it's just going to be, I think, an ongoing decision for a lot of TDs of, you know, can we stay safe? Are the numbers too high right now, even though maybe the severity of the virus isn't as bad? We're still spreading it. So I think it'll still be an issue this year on, you know, depending on the location and maybe the numbers there. But I mm-hmm. think this had a little bit to do with people being allowed there. I think there was I can't remember what it was, a convention there in Vegas the last week or whatever, the week before, and the numbers mm-hmm. were just like really, really low. So I'm sure that had a part to do with it as well, like people being able to go and participate in this event,
right.
spectator wise, not
right.
players. So it'll be interesting. I'm over it. I'm ready for us to not have to worry about it. But
I mean, of note, a conference like this by its nature is an indoor event. And it's a lot of people packed into an indoor space, whereas a disc golf tournament, just like a lot of sporting events, is an outdoor event. And whether you state it, you know, as like a bit of a rule or encouragement to people should social distance. Well, that sort of naturally happens, obviously, a little bit more at outdoor events. And, you know, all the medical professionals agree that when you're outdoors and the wind is blowing, the odds of transmission of anything, whether it's the common cold or COVID, goes way, way, way down. So my hope for 2022 is, while this might make us have to consider things like, you know, where we're staying and how we're going to get from point A to point B in airplanes or whatnot, you know, we're going to have to consider those things, at least for the early part of 2022. My hope is that it doesn't fundamentally change the outdoor tournaments too much.
Exactly.
Maybe we'll have to, limit spectators at some of them. Maybe we'll have to, you know, do some of those other mitigating things with masks and stuff like that. But I hope the events themselves aren't too terribly affected. And I also hope that we can trust some of the theories that by the time March and April get around, Omicron will have kind of run its course more or less. And, you know, our summer can be relatively back to normal. Obviously, we're going to have to wait and see, as always. But again, I'm fairly optimistic. I certainly feel bad for the Disc Golf Con situation. Hopefully they get to come back strong for an inaugural event here in a year or so. But until then, you know, as far as we know, the show goes on, right?
That's right. Yeah, all the players are definitely not disappointed, but saddened. You know, we were looking forward to this, I think, as much as all the players or the people who wanted to come spectate and watch and participate. So definitely hoping that this gets rescheduled and we can try this again next year. That's all we have for today, but make sure you join us next week, as well as following us on Twitter and ask us some questions so we can get on here and answer some fun questions. And everyone have a great week.
That's @PDGA_radio on Twitter. See ya.